right. City Council will come to order. Carla, can you, how are you today?
I'm good.
Good.
Can you please call the roll?
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Can you please read the title of the emergency ordinance?
Item 601, enact a portion of the public sidewalk management plan by creating a legal framework to manage usage of the sidewalk based on Americans with Disabilities Act requirements.
So I have a background information for the record, and then we'll have a brief presentation from Warren Jimenez, my deputy chief of staff, and from David Warble, and get right into public testimony as quickly as possible. We're really glad that you're here today. Over the past year, this city council has been working with folks from every viewpoint involved in the issues of sidewalk management, folks who work downtown, individual business owners who rely on the sidewalks for their success, mental health advocates, the police, homeless adults and youth, homeless advocates, tourism, tourists, business, neighborhood associations, people that live downtown, people with disabilities. In October of 2009, the City Council unanimously approved the Sidewalk Management Plan resolution. This resolution created a comprehensive framework for our continued work to keep downtown accessible and environmentally viable for all. This resolution included working with Commissioner Fish to proceed with the construction and operation of the long proposed but never funded Resource Access Center to improve, expand, and continue the investment in day space and other basic services for homeless folks. My adopted budget last year included $1 million for ongoing operations and how much in PDC, TIF?
About 28 million? Well, we've dedicated about $80 million.
And then $80 million for the construction, all told, for the Resource Access Center.
No, I'm sorry, Sam. There's more than one project. For TIF, it's $30
million. $30 million in TIF for the Resource Access. You can see the construction underway near the Union Station. This project is on track to open in May 2011. The Office of the City Attorney proposing an integration of all city code that regulates sidewalk uses in one chapter was another element called for of work to be completed in the October 2009 Sidewalk Management Plan resolution. This work is underway. Today's ordinance does not move that entirely forward, but moves some of it forward. Also, in the resolution of last October, working with Commissioner Fish, partnering with various community stakeholders to create a public education and donation program at places throughout downtown, including retail stores. This program will be introduced in the upcoming month. With Commissioner Saltzman and the Portland Police Bureau, they will create and regularly update a work plan for enforcing the laws, prohibiting criminal behavior on sidewalks, including littering, harassment, disorderly conduct, and drug dealing. This work plan is in progress. Commissioner Saltzman and the Portland Police Bureau are currently reviewing training programs and will propose additional training programs for private security guards under contract with the city or others who have authority to patrol the right-of-way for private providers. With the Portland Business Alliance, the Portland Development Commission, and community stakeholders proposed a downtown retail strategy to assist downtown Portland retailers, most on the street, most specifically on the street, and those rely on sidewalks for their success. This was completed and adopted by the City Council about 7 months ago. Commissioner Randy Leonard has continued to move forward on increasing the number of public toilets and increasing and fast-tracking the loo siting process with visible signing, identifying where the loo locations are. There's loo on 5th and Gleason, as more of you know, and two more loos have been approved and will be installed by the end of summer in the downtown area. I will propose a plan to better manage the concentration and placement of publication boxes, such as newspaper boxes on public sidewalks, and that plan will be out for initial public review at the end of May. Commissioner Fish and the Portland Housing Bureau partnering with community providers to ensure continuity and coordination of existing over-the-counter and internet-based information and referral resources for people experiencing homelessness or needing housing services. Information and referral resources will include 211, Rose City Resource Guide, Housing Connections, and the Community Service Center at Gleason Street Shelter. Commissioner Amanda Fritz is working with my office and others to have a, as part of that outreach, a single telephone number to report concerns from anybody regarding sidewalks in the public realm in downtown. City Council will propose an ongoing program to monitor and improve the sidewalk management plan with an oversight committee including representatives of all stakeholders. Commissioner Fritz has formed the Sharing Public Sidewalks Advisory Committee and has agreed to be the commissioner in charge of that. That separation is important to us so that the same commissioner is not in charge of implementation of these things, and her committee under her direction will be separate from other efforts. And finally, today's ordinance to propose a new city code to implement the sidewalk access and passage requirements inspired by the Federal Americans with Disability Act. Finding a way forward that balances the needs and rights of all sidewalk users is the core purpose of this sidewalk management plan legal framework. The ordinance is just one, as you have heard, of important piece of sidewalk managing the sidewalks, which is designed to manage the total utility of the sidewalk. This ordinance does not criminalize homelessness, nor does it prevent someone from sitting or lying on a public property or in certain areas of the sidewalk. Let me repeat that. For the first time, in terms of all the city's efforts to try to strike a balance on all the competing uses for the sidewalk, every sidewalk on every frontage block, for the first time, there will be a place to sit and lie. This ordinance is intended and does protect free speech. Why is this? I'll ask you to not talk while others are talking, and we're going to adhere to that rule through the remainder of the hearing while you're talking, okay? Thank you. Why is this ordinance filed as an emergency? We have had over, as you hear, we started this process last October, and it was filed as an emergency ordinance because we've also had over 2 months of public outreach on the ordinance, and we don't want folks to be further confused since we are in legal limbo of when the ordinance applies and when it does not. It is not designed to curtail people or groups of people, but rather behavior that interferes with the primary purpose of sidewalks, which is to move people. It does take a holistic approach to regulating sidewalks in order to accommodate a wide variety of needs. Funding. We see this. There are going to be questions, and there should be an advocacy. Many of you in this room are great advocates on the issue of homeless services and housing, affordable housing. So I want to speak to that for just a minute to give you some context on that. We have a regional housing crisis, and the city of Portland and Multnomah County are putting significant money towards solutions that are benefiting the entire region. The fact that the city spends more money from its general fund is important because federal dollars for homelessness services come with a lot of strings attached. Our use of basic resources, general fund money, means there aren't so many strings attached and allows us to be more flexible than other comparable cities in innovative housing and homeless programs. We have a 10-year plan to end homelessness, and we have put the resources towards it. And sometimes, even when we're cutting, like last year, we had to cut the citywide budget. This city council increased funding for affordable housing and homelessness almost 40%. We know the need is greater than ever. We're in another round of budget cuts this year, and we're working hard to always, under the leadership of Commissioner Fish, always working hard to improve the availability of shelters. Portland spends $10.6 million of its general fund money on homeless services and affordable housing. Seattle, a comparable size city in terms of population, has a levy for over $40 million directly from the voters, but its general fund is less than $600,000. In terms of general fund allocations within the region, And this is where I enlist you to continue your advocacy with us, but now turn your advocacy to counties and cities throughout the region, because we need their teamwork and their help to address this issue as well. Again, Portland, $10.6 million. Multnomah County, $8.9 million. Clackamas County, $2.1 million. Washington County, $300,000. We can't be the only local government that you advocate to. Of all the other jurisdictions, we are the ones that commit the most, and we know that we are not meeting the demand for these services. We know that each and every day. Over the next 5 years, the Portland City is already committed within our financial forecast to invest $324 million for homeless programs and affordable housing. And that compares to $635 million that we have invested in the last 10 years. Again, we know it's not enough, but more money can be realized with advocacy to other local governments. In terms of enforcement of this, the Bureau of Transportation will enforce compliance concerning permitted objects like A-boards, sidewalk cafes, and flower pots. If a permit is violated or if an item is not permitted, Bureau of Transportation will issue a warning and oversee compliance. And the phone number will be posted on the actual sidewalks and streets for anyone to call with compliance issues. Police officers will enforce compliance of people. PBOT will enforce compliance of objects. Violations of this ordinance are not criminal and will not become part of a person's permanent record. A written warning will be given on the first violation. The maximum penalty is $250 or community service. In terms of sidewalk cafes, we have put together over the past year, because of the complaints, and I think legitimate complaints, about how closely are we enforcing sidewalk cafes and A-boards and such versus people. We put together a program advisory committee, and they have made improvements to the programs. It includes stakeholders from all user groups. And even with permits, sidewalk cafes still have to provide for the clear pedestrian use zones unless it is specifically a specific situation is problem solved by the city's transportation engineer. Enforcement authority now is clearly with PBOT. Before, many of you complained, and rightfully so, that enforcement of objects and cafes was unclear, and therefore the city was not enforcing it well. You were right. We made improvements to that. The fine for businesses that violate their permits is $350. With that, I'd like to call up Warren Jimenez and David Warble to go quickly over some of the details, and then we'll get right to citizen input.
Thank you. My name is Warren Jimenez, Deputy Chief of Staff for Mayor Sam Adams. And with me is Dave Warble from the City Attorney's Office. Just to reiterate, this first draft was actually released on March 24th for public discussion and for public feedback. But really, the October 21st set the guidelines and the framework and what lens that we should take in terms of the approach that was passed by City Council. And really, that approach was based on the federal standard with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And that was really the direction given by City Council. And so as a result of releasing the first draft on March 24th, getting and hearing feedback and engaging multiple stakeholders and groups and trying to get the word out about this, we did some changes. We also released a final draft on April 16th. Before we eventually filed it last week. But today, what purposes for this presentation was to get into a little bit more of the detail about the ordinance. And so Dave will go into that right now.
Mayor, members of council, I'll go through the details of this as quickly as I can. It's going to take some time. I think it's valuable to take that time. My goal is to give everybody in the room a common understanding of what this ordinance or what this code provision would and would not do before you start your discussion this afternoon. I'm going to start, Carla, if you would, thanks, with a bit of a summary. You'll see it on your screens, of the changes from previous council efforts in this area. One of the difficulties we had with previous versions is that there was no fixed reference point from which to measure or position, what was then called the through pedestrian zone. As you see, as I go through the details here, the definitions, we're establishing a fixed reference point of a frontage line, which should make enforcement and understanding by citizens much easier.
That was actually what, the direction that we also heard from City Council was that we did not want to do a repeat of previous efforts where it's returned. So that's the reason why for the differences of the approach.
This proposal changes the focus of from previous efforts significantly in that it is, as I say, tightly focused on managing uses rather than obstruction events. And that got us crosswise with the courts. This version should avoid that. We've created in this proposal flexibility for the director of the Portland Bureau of Transportation to modify the general definition of the pedestrian use zone for specific situations and to mark that and sign it on the sidewalks, again, so that both citizens and the police are very clear on where the boundaries of these zones are. And for the first time, there was an effort to look to the needs of sidewalk users with mobility and vision disabilities in crafting these zones, and importantly, in positioning them on the sidewalks. So here's a summary of the proposed code. It boils down to really just these few points. There's a couple of definitions we'll go through, five rules, and then a list of places the law applies, which is simple, a list of nine exceptions and a precondition. This looks intimidating at first. I think as we go through this, it'll break down pretty quickly and is easily understood. I'm going to go through these definitions of pedestrian, frontage line, and pedestrian use zone. These definitions are critical to the logical operation of the proposed code, and this is probably the most critical definition of all. Pedestrian is a person who is on foot or assisted by a mobility device, recognizing we have different kinds of users, and importantly, able to move immediately to accommodate other sidewalk users. This is the core idea in the proposal, that there will be an area of the sidewalk in which people are able to very quickly accommodate other traffic on the sidewalk. Frontage line.
So if we could just go back to that, ask some, sure. Make sure we get some clarifying question. So this does not seek to in any way address what a person might be doing while they're on foot or walking within the pedestrian zone. They could be, as long as it's lawful, including panhandling, that is allowed.
Absolutely. The very tight focus here is on the person's ability to accommodate others. And that is all. Frontage line. As I said before, sidewalk topography is legally and physically very complex, and we struggled to find a way to have a reference point and decided that the easiest reference point is the edge of the sidewalk away from the curb. Now, that doesn't simplify it to absolute simplicity. You've got various situations you need to address. For instance, some places you have a sidewalk bounded by a street, and on the opposite side you typically have buildings or private property, sometimes public property. Sometimes you have sidewalks that are not bounded by a street and lie between public and private property, and you got to decide which side of the sidewalk you're going to measure from. And then finally, you have some sidewalks that aren't bounded by a street and have both public and private property, or have the same kind of property on each side of them, and you have to decide which side you're going to measure from. So this long definition just deals with those three possibilities. On the first, where you have a sidewalk that's bounded by a street, the frontage line is that point at which the area dedicated by the city to sidewalk use butts up either against private property, which is we see commonly downtown where a building front marks the edge of the sidewalk, or a vacant lot sometimes, or public property, and this happens occasionally, that is not dedicated to sidewalk use. For instance, you may have a 15-foot sidewalk along a street and then a plaza or the entrance to a public building which is paved but not dedicated to sidewalk use. And if we've created essentially a legal line along the edge opposite the curb where the edge of the land that the city dedicates to sidewalk use.
So where it gets, where we have high pedestrian, as you mentioned before, we have high pedestrian use, where there is conflicts or uncertainty because of some of these unique features on the sidewalk, we will be putting brass markers in the actual sidewalk to help people determine the various zones of use.
That makes a lot of sense. I hope that's what happens. We were careful in creating the definition, but the definition is awkward to take to the street. It would be so much better if there were very clear marks.
And this is part of the feedback we got from everybody was that the vagueness of not only did past iterations apply to the entire sidewalk, but past iterations were vague and so subject to too much interpretation and too much uncertainty by law enforcement officials.
Yes, at your request, we built in elements here that allow very clear marking in areas of ambiguity. I don't think anybody's interested in having confusion about where the boundaries are. This version of the code would, I think, make for very clear demarcation. The next two we need not spend much time on. These other situations are kind of peculiar where you have sidewalks that are away from streets, and we just made rules for which edge of the sidewalk is going to be the point from which you measure. So that knocks out most of the definitions. Pedestrian use zone is a new concept in Portland. It is surface of public sidewalk extending from the frontage line. So we've created a reference point, and the pedestrian use zone then will extend from that reference point. And as we go through here, well, here's an example. The blue line at the bottom is the frontage line, say in this case along building fronts. And the clear area, the non-hatched area, is a pedestrian use zone extending from there and from some other objects that we'll talk about in a second. Here it is. Any fixture or use authorized or allowed by the city by city permit or regulation that's on the building side of the sidewalk. And again, to go back to the diagram, you see the permitted sidewalk cafe in the planter box. The idea is that the frontage zone would extend the curb direction 8 feet from, at least on a 15-foot sidewalk, from those permitted objects and uses. This
so that I'm clear, anything that happens outside the 8 foot dimensions could include people sitting or laying.
Yes, we'll get to that.
Without raising any issues of conflict with the ordinance.
Yes, as far as sitting and laying down, that is the case. Now, there's some other parts of this proposed code that regulate behavior, say, in the hatched area, but they don't have to do with that sitting in line. There's a bit of language in here about handling dogs and that sort of thing.
And the 8 feet is for those sidewalks that are more than 10 feet, and it's 6 feet for 10 feet and less.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So, yes, on a sidewalk, many of the downtown sidewalks are 15 feet. And the way the rule is written, if the sidewalk is more than 10 feet wide, 8 feet of it is dedicated to this pedestrian use zone. And then on a sidewalk 10 feet wide or less, 6 feet. There will be times, of course, where the pedestrian use zone takes up all the sidewalk to the curb. But certainly for the most part, there is sidewalk surface that is not pedestrian use zone. And then at street corners, they are, from the extended frontage lines, the street corners are entirely pedestrian use zone due to the high traffic concentration and conflict of traffic. A lot of people cross paths there.
Including through the frontage line.
I wish I had a diagram of this, but yes, if you just take the frontage line from the building and extend it out to the street in both mm-hmm. directions, you mm-hmm. end up with either a square or a mm-hmm. pie-shaped piece right. of essentially from the building corner out to the curb cut in a fan shape. There would be pedestrian use zone.
Which, as we know, is a critical access point for mm-hmm. those with mobility devices.
Mm-hmm. We get a lot of complaints, though, about folks that solicit for causes using that quarter pie at the street corners. Again, based on court decisions, we, as long as they are standing and ability to move, this cannot impact their free speech in any way.
Correct. If people are on their feet in a mobility device, able to accommodate others? No, this law does not affect them.
I just wanted folks to know we got a lot of people wishing that we could regulate that, and we looked, and we cannot.
So on that point, ability to accommodate others doesn't necessarily mean they need to accommodate others. If a person is standing there and somebody's approaching, need they step aside, or does the person that's approaching required to walk around them? What's the nuance there?
Well, it's an interesting question. How far can government go in enforcing politeness and cultural norms? What we felt was sensible and an authorized exercise of government power was to at least put people in a position to accommodate others.
And there's no enforcement mechanism on our side with respect to that particular aspect.
If people, in fact, do not accommodate others, that may result, in certain circumstances, may result in a violation of other laws. For instance, the disorderly conduct law, the intentional interference with obstruction of pedestrians.
But not of this ordinance?
Not of this one, no. Okay. This one doesn't go that far. Okay. And build some flexibility in here that, again, the director of the Bureau of Transportation can custom design these zones and mark them. There are peculiar circumstances and situations out there that you're going to want a customized solution for, and the director can do that.
Would they be marked with the gray reflecting discs like the sidewalk cafes? Is that what we're thinking, that how we would mark them?
I was thinking little brass monuments that gets whatever works. Sure that they're going to be thinking about how best to communicate.
Anything, we'll let folks know.
Anything but duct tape.
No duct tape.
We will be. Anything, we also will be posting on PBOT on the front page. If there is anything that is permitted different from these standards, they'll be posted on the PBOT website so people will know.
That's the definitions. Once you have those in mind, we can move right to the rules. This first rule, I'm going to take you again clause by clause through here, applies during the day. That's an overgeneralization, but 7 in the morning to 9 at night. And it is that only pedestrians, which we defined earlier as people on feet or using a mobility device and able to move to accommodate others, can use the pedestrian use zone in the high pedestrian traffic areas described in subsection F. Now, we haven't seen those yet. They are right here. These are high pedestrian traffic areas that council designated some years ago as part of previous sidewalk management plans, and we have two of them currently. These are areas in which, from time to time, there's a definition in code, from time to time, more than half of the sidewalk capacity is used up by pedestrian users and designated by council. There are probably more areas in town that would qualify under the definition. Council has designated the downtown area and the Rose Quarter Lloyd area. And there's some exceptions to this rule one. Doesn't apply to people using, a forklift or a truck to move freight or merchandise, and or people going across the sidewalk to entrances in vehicles. Rule two, again, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m., and again, in the high pedestrian traffic areas, the downtown zone and the Rose Quarter Lloyd district zone. This has to do with leaving things, putting things on the sidewalk. And it prohibits that generally, except personal baggage, luggage that people can reach out and pick up. Again, the idea being that they can adjust, they can accommodate other people on the sidewalk. They're in a position to do that. The baggage isn't 15, 20 feet away, and they're unable to do it when somebody needs the space. This second exception has been in the code for decades. It's modernized some with some ADA guidance contributed to modernizing it by requiring that if merchants have, say, a pallet that's been delivered to the storefront, it's got to present a continuous vertical rise of at least 36 inches. The ADA guidance that the city gets says it's very important to people who are using canes in particular.
So a person can be sitting within the area other than the pedestrian zone. So whatever space that is, and they're allowed to have their personal baggage in the pedestrian zone as long as it's within reach of them?
The idea is that up above in the in the general rule that there can't be any baggage on the sidewalk in the pedestrian use zone unless it's within arm's reach of a pedestrian. So if a person is seated outside the pedestrian use zone, that's entirely not addressed. But if their baggage is in the pedestrian use zone, that would be a violation because they, in fact, are not a pedestrian.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying. I didn't understand that when I first read that. So a person sitting or lying on the sidewalk, by definition, then is not a pedestrian. Having baggage in the pedestrian zone would thus be a violation. However, if they were standing in the pedestrian zone with that same baggage, they would be a pedestrian and would be allowed to have that.
You've got it. Now, you'll see the same kind of thinking in the management of dogs, which we'll get to in a minute.
It's hard for us, and I want to laud Warren and Dave and others and all the citizens on the group. It is hard to legislate common courtesy and common sense, but we really are trying to here.
And there's an exception in this rule, too, of course, for objects allowed by the Director of Bureau of Transportation. Through this proposed code, you'll see that it often gives the city engineers, the traffic engineers, the ability to make decisions about sidewalk capacity use for the whole community and decide appropriate uses on behalf of the community. Rules 3 and 4 have to do with dogs. And again, 7 in the morning, 9 at night. Now, this is different than you've seen before. We were talking earlier about a pedestrian use zone only. This has to do with all parts of sidewalks in the high pedestrian traffic areas, which are the downtown zone and the Rose Quarter Lloyd Center. All right, so this is different. We're now talking about the entire sidewalk in those two areas. And the proposed rule that all dogs must be controlled, either in hand or leashed, and close to the handler. Dog's neck must be within 2 feet of the handler. To your point, a person lying down or sitting out of the pedestrian use zone can have a dog there as long as the dog is controlled and close.
The same requirements that a pedestrian would have
for baggage
in pedestrian use zone. Of a dog.
In the pedestrian use zone, here's the next one. If the dog's in the pedestrian use zone, it's got to be under the control of a pedestrian. So in other words, if a dog's going to be in the pedestrian use zone, it's got to be with a pedestrian.
My question is, the control of the pedestrian isn't the same control as you've described in one, within 2 feet on a leash, just in control of a pedestrian.
Number one applies to everywhere on the sidewalk.
Okay.
So wherever you are on the sidewalk with a dog, dog's got to be within 2 feet.
Gotcha.
All right, so the pedestrian who has a dog in the pedestrian use zone's got to have that dog within 2 feet as
okay.
well.
Okay.
The person sitting down with a dog's got to have that dog within 2 feet.
I see.
But
doesn't the Multnomah County leash law require all dogs to be leashed?
Yes.
So we're really looking at the length of the leash. You can't have them on the extender leashes.
Exactly. Aspect. So. And that's something you all can talk about, whether 2 feet is practical. That's one of the things you can adjust.
Outside of the pedestrian use zone.
Everywhere on the sidewalk, 2 feet.
Everywhere on the sidewalk within 2 feet.
Yeah. But if the dog's going to be in the pedestrian use zone, it's got to be accompanied and controlled by a pedestrian. Again, the idea being just like with baggage, if the animal's in the pedestrian use zone, you got to have somebody there who's able to move it to accommodate other people. I don't think we need to talk about three. Here's rule number 5. Now, importantly, this is citywide. And as I made the distinction just before about parts of the, let me just say this. This applies on all sidewalks and, again, at all times. So we're talking about all city sidewalks. Under the circumstances that a person using a mobility device or relying for guidance on a cane helper or guide animal makes a reasonable request to use for passage, other users have to yield use of the sidewalk to that person. We've not had this in the code before, and we've not applied this kind of rule outside of the two, the downtown zone and the Rose Quarter Lloyd Center zones.
Can I go back to that just to?
Sure.
This is intended in part to deal with when there is either unpermitted work on sidewalks that prevents people of different abilities to use the sidewalk. It does allow for permitted work, and again, permits are will be noted. Active permits will be noted on the Bureau of Transportation's website, which we currently do not do now either. But it's intended to deal with. We've had a number of complaints over the years from folks that rely on sidewalks to get to and from, but were unable to because of either unpermitted, mostly unpermitted work on the sidewalk or permitted work that the city didn't do a good job of communicating its presence. So we're trying to improve that, mostly our practices citywide.
Yeah, that's correct. I was just going to stress that this really does come from, we've been targeting our efforts around the downtown Lloyd Center area, but we also heard feedback from the other communities about outside of that area as well.
Number of exceptions, 9 of them. These exceptions, council has seen and the audience has seen these exceptions before. They've been adopted many times previously. I'll go through them pretty quickly. They have to do with fairness. People suffering medical emergencies certainly can't be expected to comply. Physical, mental incapacitation, the same. And, of course, if the director of the Bureau of Transportation authorizes some use of the sidewalk on behalf of the community, that's an exemption from coverage of the proposed code. Number 4 has to do with the city's activities. They're performing public safety maintenance and construction functions. Of course, you're going to want those to proceed. They benefit the community, and they're an approved temporary use by the city. Of course, if there is there's an event that's using the streets and sidewalks, permits been issued for it, we would expect people to be able to fully use the sidewalks for those purposes during that temporary event. This is a speech exception that's been in at least the last couple versions. Seems to have worked well. Of course, if, again, the engineers decide that a good use of sidewalk capacity is installation of a chair or bench, certainly want people using that as an exception to coverage of the proposed code. People, of course, are going to wait in lines for goods and services. They're going to have to, those will be ad hoc, of course, depending upon how many people show up, exactly what's going on. If it's raining, people are going to create, in an ad hoc manner, lines. That's expected. That works well. The only expectation of the city is that people adjust those lines if a police officer sees a need to improve passage along the sidewalk. And there is a street musician partnership agreement that's been in existence, I think, since 1994. People who are performing while complying with that are exempt.
Go back up to 3.
Sure.
I'm sorry, 2. So could you explain number 2?
There are going to be people who have medical and mental events that incapacitate them from time to time. It seems patently unfair, and councils recognized this for years, to be enforcing a sidewalk code against being on the sidewalk in a way people can't control. People, you're going to have intoxication events. You will have, we've had seizures, of course, downtown, heart attacks, all sorts of things that make people absolutely unable to change where they are, to not be in that part of the sidewalk. So it has seemed to council over the years commonsensical, I think, to not apply the law to them.
So if someone is unconscious for whatever reason or not able to respond to requests from other users of the sidewalk, that is an explicit exception to enforcement of this rule.
Yes, absolutely. Precondition. This has been in previous versions of the code. It was very important to council that because of the complexity of previous versions of the sidewalk code and probably this one, that people be given an opportunity to fully understand what the code requires. and formalize that in a notice of given by peace officers in writing. Importantly, these notices cannot be given out by people who are not peace officers. Of course, the various patrols that exist downtown and private citizens can talk to someone who is not complying with the code and try to persuade them. But as far as legal effect of a notice, only a peace officer can provide that.
So that means police officers, sheriffs, who else is allowed to?
Peace officers, Portland Police Bureau officers, county sheriffs, certainly, deputy sheriffs, state patrol, if we would ever see one of them on our sidewalks looking to enforce this kind of law.
Not clean and safe officers and not
They are not peace officers,
security.
No.
Okay, thank you.
Penalty hasn't changed from prior versions. Council some years ago decided to decriminalize the sidewalk code, the violations of the sidewalk code, and the maximum penalty has been and is proposed to be $250 fine. And in lieu of that penalty, and this has existed in current versions of the code, previous versions of the code, judges can impose community service rather than a monetary fine. You've seen it all. Hopefully,
Dave, I have a question on that. If a citation is issued, person doesn't pay the penalty, and doesn't show up for a court hearing on that, then what happens?
Keeps changing, of course, how the system responds to that. I believe that these cases typically go, as the system currently operates, to community court, I think it is. And I believe it's the current practice to eventually issue a warrant if people fail to show up and take care of their cases. Now, the practical implications of that, I'm not sure. I can find that out for you. I think that eventually the court can take the person into custody so that they're forced to appear.
Is that it?
You have seen what there is to see here. Any questions? I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any more upfront questions?
All right. I'd just like to quickly go back to the rationale of the 8-foot zone, how we got to 8 feet. That was set by taking a look at the ADA guidelines. We know that from the frontage zone 2 feet out, those that are visually impaired really use that space to get around. And then we also know that in order for two wheelchairs to pass by each other.
Because of auditory, being able to hear.
That's correct.
Noise off the wall.
That's correct. And then we know that for two wheelchairs to go by each other and pass by each other, it takes 3 feet to accommodate each chair. And so that's how we've come up with the rationale from the 8 feet. You have the 2 feet along the frontage line and then the 6 feet to allow those two wheelchairs to pass by each other.
Mayor, before we go to, is the next step testimony?
Yeah.
So can I ask you just some procedural questions that either you or Commissioner Fritz might know? So how long has the comment period been for people to email or write in with any comments to this proposed ordinance?
Sure. Well, this was the guideline was initially passed with City Council on October 21st, and there was a multiple steps of feedback up to that point. But this initial draft was actually released on March 24th, so a little over a month ago.
Do you have a sense of how many comments you've received?
Yeah. We received approximately, I believe, 200 emails that we received from folks, as well as we've been engaged with other various stakeholder groups. For example, with Commissioner Fitz's Sidewalks Committee, this was presented on April 5th after the initial comment period closed on April 2nd. So taking all of this feedback, after we engaged the Sidewalk Committee, we actually came up with a final version that was released on April 16th. Again, allowing that feedback, if we saw the feedback that would help craft this in a common sense way. And then we filed the final version on April 22nd.
And my other question is for Commissioner Fritz. Could you remind us roughly the composition of your sidewalk committee and what action you've taken on this proposed ordinance?
We generally get about 50 people each first Monday. The next meeting actually is next Monday, May 3rd, from 3:30 to 5. It's a committee that doesn't have a formal membership, so anybody is welcome to come. And we have a broad range of people from businesses, business owners, downtown dwellers, either living inside or living outside, social services agencies, a very broad cross-section of people who care about sharing public sidewalks.
Has the committee taken a formal or informal position on this proposal?
The committee is not, it's an advisory committee. So the way it was set up and structured and the way it will continue to function is that anybody is welcome to come, and I am there every time I listen. And then whenever I hear any concerns after the discussion that folks have, I bring them to the relevant commissioner in charge. So we always get an update on housing from Danielle at Zemmer in your office. We always get an update on police issues. There's always an open time for asking questions. So it's really a discussion forum rather than a committee that would bring a formal recommendation to council on this ordinance.
Okay. Thank you.
Just to note that key piece, in previous efforts there were an oversight committee, and this committee would act in terms of monitoring and implementation of this code.
So we're going to be getting the information about enforcement and discussing that. I've also asked the Human Rights Commission to look at whether they're interested in having that information sent to them. But again, what Commissioner Fish and I worked on hard last summer in terms of sharing public spaces and having some community conversations, that's what I want to get to here. I want us to be talking with each other, listening with each other, and figuring out solutions together, which I believe is the approach that this ordinance is one piece of. Because to me, this ordinance is like striping, except we're not striping, but it's like the sharing of the street, that there's a through lane for cars and other vehicles, there's a parking space, there's a bike lane, there's some places where driver remain at the wheel and you can stay there for a short amount of time. It's similar to that on the sidewalks because we have so many people who want to use our public sidewalks. We've tried letting everybody just figure it out themselves, and that doesn't seem to be working for various segments of folks. So this ordinance is designed to specifically say, you're welcome to be here, you're welcome to be here. We're all going to share the sidewalk in this manner. So I'm looking forward to hearing the testimony to hear whether you think we've figured that out correctly or what else we should be doing.
And just to be clear, I'm happy voting on it today. I'm happy carrying it over and voting on it next week and having testimony of both meetings. What we found in our previous efforts, though, is that not being clear about when it takes effect has created the kinds of confusion and potential conflict that we want to avoid. So the idea of when we vote on it, we've done a lot of public outreach. This is part of that. We don't have to vote on it today. We can decide to vote on it next week or the week after. But the idea is we wanted to be clear about when it takes effect.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's go to the testimony.
About 36 people signed up.
So we'll do 2 minutes each. Unless you've prepared for three, we'll give you three.
The first three, please come on up, are Andrea Meyer, Wade Varner, and Ward Shortridge.
I do have 3 minutes. I have written.
And they'll be followed by Justin Karen, Jacob Martinez, and Arwin Bird.
So Ms. Meyer needs...
Yes, I have prepared my 3 minutes.
No problem.
My outline. Thank you.
I know how that goes.
And I do have written testimony. Mayor Adams, Commissioners Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I do appreciate the desire to make our sidewalks accessible for everyone, and we do appreciate many of the choices made. However, at the same time, laws should be written so that the public, law enforcement, and ultimately the courts understand what can and cannot be done, and we have concerns about that. I have concerns regarding the definition. Improper use of a sidewalk in high pedestrian traffic area provides that during set hours, only pedestrians may use the pedestrian use zone in high pedestrian traffic areas. So what is a pedestrian? As it's defined in this code, it's a person who is on foot or assisted by mobility device and able to move immediately to accommodate others. As a side note, I'd say move immediately to accommodate others is not defined, and that may be a problem. But more importantly, what does on foot mean? There is no dictionary definition because it's two words. It's an expression. And as best I can tell, it doesn't have one meaning. I did of my sophisticated internet search. One definition for on foot is by walking or running rather than by riding. It references the means of transportation, as in, I came on foot rather than automobile, or the suspect fled on foot. Another definition references the action. on foot is to be in motion. One is moving and traveling as opposed to stopped or standing. If that were in the intended definition, then the rest of the definition in the pedestrian to be able to move immediately to accommodate others is unnecessary. So it ends up making the definition something like a person who is in motion and able to move immediately to accommodate others. In addition, under that definition, it would then be illegal, it sounds like, for anyone to use a high pedestrian traffic area for anything other than movement, meaning no stopping or standing for any reason, to look around, ask directions, visit friends, stand and wait for the TriMet bus, avoid the rain as you wait for TriMet or Max, or get out of the pedestrian way where people are walking. And this is towards the frontage side of where I'm speaking. I could not locate any definition of on foot to describe someone as standing. So, as one assumes, to distinguish this activity from someone who is sitting. A regulation is void for vagueness if a reasonable person cannot tell from the terms of the law what is prohibited and what is not permitted. Designation of specific pedestrian use zones. As you know, there's much variation block to block in the width, government structures, plants, trees, public art, and so on. So the example I want to give is just one area that I think is an important question. Pioneer Courthouse, not the square at Pioneer Courthouse. Between 5th and 6th on Morrison, there's a natural pedestrian zone, and then there's public art and sculptures and trees, which make it really difficult for anyone to walk that area. But we don't know what the measurements are. I didn't measure that. So is that area where the public art is, where people could sit and stand, going to be allowed to sit and stand in that area? But if the measurement doesn't allow it, is law enforcement going to look at it and go, the measurement doesn't allow it, it's part of the pedestrian use zone, even if it really isn't? And then the same question if you look at 5th and 6th on that same block where you've got the federal courthouse and you've got the brick fence, it's or brick wall that people are sitting on. As we know, the MAX trains, there's barely any benches or area to cover. And so what happens? Is it going to be enforced if people are waiting for MAX trains? It's these questions that are up in the air. Briefly, if I can make a few more quick points. I don't know if you said it for two or
three.
But if I could cover my areas, I would appreciate the time. The oversight, I particularly do want to note that oversight was added to this ordinance. It wasn't in the original draft, that would give it to this advisory committee that I have been asked to attend these meetings. It is not, do I feel, within the scope of our work, and it's certainly not within ACLU's. We purposely did not sit on the safe oversight group. I was on the safe work group that the mayor put, but I can tell you from having attended those meetings, a great deal of frustration by those who participated in that. And the same with getting data on the drug and prostitution free zones.
Different mayor,
but if you do not give an oversight entity of any kind that wants to actually be the oversight the authority to have the data collected and retained in a way that they can look at afterwards, then you don't have meaningful oversight. And this ordinance does not set forth any requirements by the Bureau of Transportation or the Police Bureau.
So Andrea, in your written testimony, I can follow all those points and kind of intuit or follow your suggested changes. The one area where you don't have a suggested change is the language piece, is the definitional piece. We say definition is not clear about on foot. Do you have a suggested change in language which clarifies?
Oh, Commissioner.
Well, in the other section, you were more prescriptive in terms of what we could do to fix it.
I don't know what the intention of that space is and what is not intended
standing,
to have.
Then
I'll leave it to the lawyers. I mean,
we're happy to take your suggestion to answer your question about intent. It's standing or moving.
Well, I would hope that you would write
stationary or moving, whatever the right lawyerly language is.
I'm looking for English so that everyone can
then
understand, not the lawyers.
We look forward to getting your English.
Well, I leave that for your counsel. I don't think ACLU cannot be in a position of redrafting something that ultimately we may be. But I'm here to at least provide you clear.
On the issue of the uniqueness of every block face, many block faces, that's why this is the first time the city is actually going to mark it.
Right.
And it's going to be posted online. So that is how we have to deal with the reality. The great thing about this particular issue, and I appreciate your testimony, mm-hmm. is that the places of most conflict are incredibly well known. And we pretend every year when this weather gets better that it's a surprise mm-hmm. that along the sidewalk frontages that you mentioned, it's a surprise that that's where we have conflict. So we intend to, on the ground so everybody knows, have on the ground the rules of engagement and a place for people to call if they have any questions. Appreciate your testimony. Thank you.
Mayor, can I I appreciate that. I looked at the draft of the ordinance, and it had given the authority to the Bureau of Transportation to do that, but it had not said that it shall happen. And so I appreciate the intention.
I don't know if the legislative intent. I'm happy to clarify the ordinance that it shall happen.
Great. The other, if I have any questions posed to me, I do have a free speech issue and would love to have a moment to at least note that.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead. And again, it is a drafting, and I think Mr. Wilbur rightly talked about Section G5 that talks about the activities of rallies, demonstrations, if they are permitted. Your own city code and rules that you've passed on the street and sidewalk permit events do not require permits for small sidewalk use, which is less than 200 people, held on sidewalk and obey all traffic regulations. Now, you may say subsection 6, which talks about expressive events, covers that. I'm just looking for finer written language because it suggests to the reader that small parades and gatherings on the sidewalk must be permitted, or that the only kind are permitted, and that's actually not true under the decision.
That's a good catch. I need to move you along. Any other points you want to highlight? We'll make that change as well.
I hope those statistics kept on your undercover officer missions to expose the littering that's going on in the downtown area. That's something that was included in the ordinance. It's unfortunate that's included.
I think we're looking for drug dealing more.
I wish you would have just maybe left that part out as a way to focus on the
part issue. Of the feedback we got when after the court ruling was that folks want us to not do anything and just enforce the laws on the book. So that's why it's included as illustrative, as one of the criminal acts that people asked us to enforce as opposed to this. So
I'm
that's
thrilled
why
if you go after the cigarette smokers and the butts, and I hope that is a report that the Portland Bureau of Police shows that they are actually going after those who are littering, particularly the cigarette smokers, because that's rampant on every block.
To address the oversight issue, and I realize everybody else is waiting to get to it, but I want to answer questions as they come up. The City Council is the oversight committee, so we have the power to, and we will make sure that we get the data from the Bureau of Police and Bureau of Transportation. I specifically did not allow the inclusion of the word oversight as far as the charge of the Sidewalks Advisory Committee, because that's not what it's for. It's for monitoring and advising. The council is responsible for oversight, and that we're taking that very seriously.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Appreciate your comments, and I see for staff two great changes on the standing issue and shall mark, where there is anything different from the standard set out in the ordinance. So appreciate the feedback. As always, you've been with this issue a long time. Sir.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor. Awesome. Commissioners, my name is Wade Varner. I'm a disabled veteran. I'm here on behalf of people. The sit light ordinance, as I've seen, especially as it was explained to me today by the city attorney, leaves so many gray areas that, I mean, how are you going to enforce this against people? You know, you can have police officers that have personal grudges or don't like a specific person, and he keeps doing it. What you're doing is you're recriminalizing being homeless. Because if they get that ticket, they don't go to the court, they get arrested. So that criminalizes being homeless. And that's something that I've seen this city in the last 30 years going through this. And I've been active on this more than once. On occasions, I see the problem with this is too many gray areas, not enough specific rules on how we're going to enforce it, how the police can enforce it, and what kind of rules that the homeless or anybody else that wants to use it, the demonstrators and such as that, we had to get a permit to walk down the sidewalk today. So, you know, I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at the recriminalization of homelessness and camping and stuff in this city, the fact that they waken people up. And the fact that as we know, the Army is using this over in the Far East on people, the sleep deprivation and stuff like that, loud noises, constant, causes them to go insane. So what you're going to do is you're going to cause people to go insane. And I've seen it out on the streets. I'm there every day at Sisters of the Road. I see this stuff. And to recriminalize this and to vote for this section without having the black and white that we need to enforce it is insanity on your part, because it's going to cost the city so much money in legal and police fees and, you know, fees for the courts and everything else.
What's the black and white missing? I want to make sure I get your point.
The black and white is missing is the police officer has to do this certain thing if this person is doing it. I've seen a lot of area in here explained to me by the city attorney that they have that area, and then they can hand the ticket out and recriminalize homelessness. That's what I'm saying.
I appreciate what you're saying. What we intentionally did not do is this is about what you can do, and we're being very concrete in terms of the spacing and everything else, and we will be clear on the sidewalk, but we intentionally are not trying to regulate activity, which are what people are doing, and that's why you can sit on portions of the sidewalk and lay on portions of the sidewalk.